The first parak of Shabbos, as we mentioned, starts off with the discussion of the Isra of Chotza'ah, carrying on Shabbos when there's no Eruv. Now, the structure of the parak in general talks a lot about Erev Shabbos and things that can or cannot be done on Erev Shabbos. There are certain things that cannot be done on Erev Shabbos because they may come and cause us to violate a melacha on Shabbos itself. For example, we have to be careful about what we carry in our pockets right before Shabbos, because we may forget that we're carrying things and we may go into Shabbos carrying and violate the Isra of Chotza'ah. So that's the discussion in Mishnah Gimel of being careful not to carry too close to Shabbos, because we may do the Isra of Chotza'ah. And then, because we have that discussion, and towards the end of the parak also throughout, we have discussions of concerns, what can or cannot be done on Erev Shabbos, and Gzeiras of Chazal, rabbinic decrees, what should be not done on Erev Shabbos, because we might have violations. We start off the Masechta to give background on the Malacha of Chotza'ah, so we can understand the concern, starting in Mishnah Gimel. So Mishnah Aleph discusses the prohibitions of Chotza'ah, carrying on Shabbos. Now Mishnah Bet is also more background, because in Mishnah Gimel we're going to talk about what should not be done on Erev Shabbos, because we may violate Shabbos. Mishnah Bet has a similar concern, discussion all week long, what should not be done before davening, because we may come to forget to daven. Okay, so we're going to start in with Mishnah Aleph and some background when it comes to the Isra of Chotza'ah to violate the De'oraisa prohibition of carrying. There are a number of components that are required. First, in order to violate Chotza'ah, somebody has to do an Akira la'akor, to uproot, to lift up an item, for example, if it's on the ground. So an Akira, and afterward, it has to also be placed down, a Hanacha, la'haniach, to place it down on the ground or some other area. Those are both required. Now, in between, there are other things that are required. It has to go Chotza'ah, means carrying from Rishus to Rishus, from one territory to another. That item, you have to uproot it and go from a public thoroughfare, a Rishus Harabim, to a Rishus Hayachid, a private thoroughfare, or vice versa. So you need an Akira in one, a Hanacha in the other, and you have to go from one Rishus to another Rishus. Or also carrying is if that is all done in a Rishus Harabim, a public area. For example, somebody sees a piece of garbage and it bothers him that there's garbage, there's litter on the ground, especially in Yerushalayim, especially in Eretz Yisrael. We should keep the streets clean. So the garbage is, he sees the public garbage is a number of feet away. In fact, it's five amos away. It's five amos is a number of feet away. So he lifts it up and he goes and he forgets the Shabbos. There's no Erev. Assume there's no Erev, and he puts it in the garbage. There was an Akira from the ground, lifting up that piece of garbage, lifting up that Pepsi can, that Coke can, whatever you prefer. And he walks four amos. It's approximately 8 feet, going to that garbage, and he puts it into the garbage or throws it into the garbage. That is an hanacha. So without an Erev, that would be the biblical prohibition of Chotza'ah. That's assuming that the area he is in is a Rishus Harabim. So our Mishnah Aleph is going to discuss violations of the prohibition, and also Deraisa, and also Derabanan. And what we're going to see is the Mishnah is going to use the classic example of somebody inside in a Rishus Hayachid, a private thoroughfare, standing at the door, and somebody comes and knocks on his door and needs something, and that other person is standing in a Rishus Harabim, a public thoroughfare. And the discussion, because it's a common example, is the Balabais, or a wealthy person, is on the inside, and an Ani, person who's needy, who's not well off, is knocking on the door. The door opens, and he's standing in the outside. So the person on the outside is in a public area, a Rishus Harabim. The person on the inside is in a Rishus Harabim. And what the Mishnah is going to talk to us about is that person standing on the outside has the possibility of violating the Isra of Chotza'ah in two ways, Chotza'ah and Hachnasa. If he takes the item and lifts it up and places it inside the house, then he has violated the Isra of Hachnasa. He is taking something, an item from a public area, put it into a private area, or the reverse. If he takes it from the private area, he does the Akira and takes it out and puts it down, he has violated again. But one, he has put the item in, one, he is taking the item out, but he's violated either way. There's two ways to violate the Isra Doraisa. And similar, or same with the person on the inside, if he takes an item from the inside and puts it on the outside, he has violated the Isra Doraisa. Or if he's taken an item on the outside and brought it onto the inside, he has again violated the Isra Doraisa. So the person standing on the outside can violate the Isra Doraisa in two ways. in and out, and the person on the inside also can violate this d'orayis if he takes the item in or puts it out. Now, there are also times that we'll see that the person on the inside can violate an iser d'rabbanan in two ways, and the person on the outside can also violate an iser d'rabbanan in two ways if they only do half of the action of taking the item in and out. So we will, Amir Tzashem, get to that shortly in the Mishnah. So the Mishnah says as follows. It's going to give a concept, a principle, and then we will define the principle. Yitzias HaShabbos, when it comes to carrying on Shabbos, Shtayim Shehen Arba Bifnin, the person who's standing on the inside can violate, as we said, Shtayim 2, Isuri Del Raisa, by taking the item out or taking the item in. Shehen Arba Bifnin. Shehen Arba means, and there are also an additional two ways that he can violate the Isur Dirabanan. He does part of the act, but not the full act of taking the item in and out, and we'll explain that. And again, the person on the outside, Ushtaim Shen Arba Bachus, the person standing on the outside, he can also violate on a Dereisa level in two ways, taking the item in and out. Those are the two ways. And also, Shen Arba, there are an additional two ways he can violate the prohibition in a rabbinic form. So Ketzad, the Mishnah then asks, so how exactly can that be done? So now the Mishnah sets up the scenario. He'ani omed bachutz. We have the poor person standing on the outside in the Rishus Harabi, in the public thoroughfare, Ubal Habayis Bifnim, and we have the person, the owner of the house, standing on the inside. It doesn't have to be a poor person in a Bala Bais. It doesn't really matter, but those are the examples for simplicity in the Mishnah. And this is the scenario. Pashat Ha'ani, we're going to start talking about the person standing on the outside, how he can violate the Isser Doreis of Hotza in two ways. Pashat Ha'ani Es Yado Lifnim. So the Ani does an Akira on the outside, and he puts his hand inside the house. So he's going from a Rishus HaRabin to Rishus HaYachi Lifnim. Then Nasan Letoch Yado Shabal HaBais. And he places it. In other words, he does a Hanacha into the hand of the Baal HaBais. So here the Ani on the outside did a Hachnasa. He did an Akira. He lifted up the item. He went inside to the Rishus HaYachi, and he also did a Hanacha. That's an Isser Deoraisa that we're calling Hachnasa, that he's putting the item in. And also, if he takes the item out, or if the person on the outside put his hand in and he did a hotza, meaning he lifted in, he did an akira of an item on the inside. It could be in the hand of the person on the inside or on the floor, and he did an akira and he took it out and he did a hanacha. Again, those are two ways that the ani can violate the iser d'oraisa. So the Mishnah says, ani chayav, the ani, the person on the outside, violated the iser d'oraisa of Hotza or Hachnasa, Ubal Habayis Pater, and the person standing on the inside did not violate Shabbos in any way, not even in Isser D'Rabbanan. Now, just to mention quickly, the postgame discussed that still there is a problem of either Lifnei Iver, which is the D'Oraisa of facilitating the crime, he's assisting the Ani on the outside, or Misayeya, which would be an Isser D'Rabbanan. So even though the Baal Habayis, the person on the inside, is not violating Hilcha Shabbos, but he is certainly has culpability as either a biblical prohibition of Lifnei Iver or Misayeha. Okay, now we're talking about the person standing on the outside, that he can violate the halacha of Shabbos, the Doraisa, one of two ways, putting the item in or taking the item out. Same thing applies for the person on the inside. Pashat Baal Habayis Ed Yado Lachutz V'Nasan Letoch Yado Shalani. The person standing on the inside now, he lifts up the item, he takes the item from the inside the house and puts it on the outside, and he places it down. He does a Hanacha in the hand of the Ani. That's when he's taking the item from inside and putting it outside. Or if the person on the inside lifts his hand out, empty, and there he takes the item from the hand or the floor, it doesn't really matter, outside, and he does an Akira, and he brings it in, vehichnis, and he does a Hanacha, he places it down. In this case, it's not the person on the outside that's doing the full action, but the Baal HaBayis Chayav, the person on the inside, has violated an Isser D'Oraisa, either by taking the item from the inside and putting it on the outside, and he did the Akira and the Hanacha, or conversely, he lifted it from the outside, did the Akira, and he brought it inside. He violates this or D'Oraisa V'Ha'ani Patur, and the person on the outside, he didn't violate any of the Isuri of Shabbos, but if he was passive, for example, he had his hand out, and the Baal HaBayis lifted it out of his hand, again, he would be violating the Isur D'Oraisa of Lifnei'iv, or the Isur D'Rabbanan of Misayeya. The Mishnah in the Sefer now continues to discuss how the Ani on the outside or the Baal HaBayis on the inside can violate the Isser D'Rabbanan but not an Isser Doraiso. So when we said Shtaim Shen Arba, we've gone through the Shtaim, the two violations of the standing on the outside, how he can violate the Isser Doraiso. We've gone through the two Isruim of the Balabai standing on the inside, how he can also violate the Isser Doraiso. Now we're going to see Shen Arba, the two ways that the person on the outside and the two ways of the person on the inside can violate an Isser Derabanan. And that is the case when each of them does a partial act. In other words, they do either an Akira or an Hanacha, but not both. If they did both, then it would be an Isser Doraiso, but they participated and did part of the Hotzah or Harachnasa, that would be the Isser Derabanan. So we're going to talk about, again, the Ani first, standing on the outside, and the example is going to be either he did an Akira on the outside, but he did not do a Hanacha on the inside, or something was passed out to him. He didn't do the Akira from the inside, taking the item out, but he did take the item and do a Hanacha on the outside. So he did half of the Malacha. Pasha Te'ani Es Yado Lifnim. So the Ani here, he did an Akira on the outside and he put his hand in, but here he didn't put the item down. The person on the inside took the item from him. V'natal Bais Bal HaBais Mitocha. The Bal HaBais on the inside took the item. So it's the Bal HaBais that is doing the second half of the Malacha. Or when talking about the Ani on the outside, Osh Nasan Litocha the Hotzi, here the Bal HaBais on the inside put the item in the hand of the Ani, and the Ani took it out and did a Hanacha. In other words, he is doing half the act. He's either doing the Akira, which is what we mentioned initially, or he's doing the Hanacha, but he's not doing both. The Mishnah says, Shnehem Turim, both the Bal HaBais and the Ani, they are Turim. In other words, here Patur doesn't mean it's Mutter, it means they're not violating the Isser de Oraisa of carrying, because neither of them then did both the Akira and the Hanacha, but this is Pater Aval Asr, it is a violation of the rabbinic prohibition of Hotzah. So they are violating a Isser de Rabbanan because they are doing half of the act. In this case, we were focused on the Ani. The Ani did either the Akira or the Hanacha, that's an Isser de Rabbanan. And now we're going to talk about the Bal HaBais on the inside when he violates an Isser Derabanan, that he does half of the action. Either he does an Akira in passing something out, or he does a Hanacha when he receives something, but he doesn't do the whole Malacha. So again, Pashat Bal HaBais et Yado Lachut. So here the Bal HaBais did the Akira on the inside. He passes his hand out from inside the house outside, but he doesn't do the Hanacha. V'natal Ha'ani Metocha. Here the Ani takes the item from the hand of the Bal HaBais on the inside. So the Bal HaBais, what we're focused on, only did the Akira, not the Hanacha. Or oh, Shinasan, here the Ani placed Litocha v'echnis, the Ani on the outside put the item into the hand of the person on the inside. Person on the inside accordingly didn't do the Akira, but he did bring it in and did the Hanach on the inside. Again, we see here that the Bal HaBais is either doing the Akira or the Hanacha. The Mishnah says in this scenario, Shnehem Turim. Again, it's not an Isser Doraisa, it's Pater Aval Asr. In other words, they're Pater from the Isser Doraisa, but it's Asr on a rabbinic level. This would be because they're doing half of the Malacha and Isser Derabanan. Mishnah Beis is a precursor to Mishnah Gimel, which discusses activities that should not be done going into Shabbos, even before Shabbos, because somebody may come to violate Shabbos. So the Mishnah Beis is before that, discussing all week long certain activities that should not be done before the mitzvah of Mincha, because somebody may get drawn into the activities and may never come around to davening Mincha. Just on a high level, to talk about Zmani Atfilah, each of our Tfilah, Shachris, Mincha, and Maariv, they have their specific times. When it comes to Mincha, there are two very important times relevant for us. Mincha Gedola, which is 6.5 hours into the day, and Mincha Ketana, which is 9.5 hours into the day. In other words, we'll take a simple scenario that sunrise is at 6 a.m. and sunset is at 6 p.m. There are many shitas on this. We're just going to give one. 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. is our day. So Mincha on a 6 to 6 day, Mincha Gedola would be 12:30 in the afternoon, and Mincha Ketana, the smaller Mincha, would be 3:30 in the afternoon. So the Mishnah says as follows, Lo Yeshev Adam Lifnei HaSapar Samuch LeMincha. Somebody should not go and get a haircut Samuch LeMincha. Doesn't say at the time of Mincha, but even Samuch LeMincha, close to Mincha, which is defined as half an hour before Mincha. And here, many Meforshim say that it's talking about Mincha Gedola. In other words, from 12 noon, 6 hours into the day, somebody should not be getting a haircut. Now, the concern is not that the haircut may elongate for that many hours, may elongate for 6 hours until Shkia, but the concern here is that in case the shaver breaks and the scissors break and it becomes a bit of a debacle, that things may elongate and the person may forget to daven mincha. Achi spala, once you daven mincha, obviously, then you can go get that haircut. Continuing, and these are just examples of items that may elongate and somebody may forget to daven mincha, but it can be any other activities also that these same concerns exist about. Lo yikanes adam lemerchatz, don't take a shvitz, don't go to the bathhouse and get a shvitz, because maybe the shvitz is the concern is not maybe the shvitz could take a long time, but also person going into something very hot like a sauna, the person may not feel well afterward, he may faint, and he may never come to daven mincha. Velo leborsiki, the tannery, this is just an example of a worked activity that could elongate longer than expected. Even going into the tannery where somebody, the factory, and you see something wrong and you may get drawn in, I'm just going to run into the office and do a quick emails and a few calls, and that elongates and problems come up. V'lo le'echol, and not to eat. Don't have a se'uda. It's actually a machlokas between the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah what type of se'uda we are talking about. The Shulchan Aruch is machmir on this. Even a se'uda ketana, even a small se'uda, should not be eaten samuch lemincha gedola, close to mincha gedola, which means from that 12 o'clock, somebody should not have a meal, even a regular meal. The Ramah, on the other hand, says there's a dissenting view that it's only prohibited to have a festa meal, for example, at a chasana or a mila, something that is a much larger meal, but a regular meal would be acceptable. The Mishnah also says, for Loladin, don't, as a judge on a Beis Din, don't adjudicate a case, don't get involved in the case. Even if you're just thinking you're going to render the decision, things can elongate and you may come to not daven mincha. And then the Mishnah says, v'im chischilu, and if you started when you should not have started, for example, it's 12:30, 1 o'clock, you shouldn't be starting, but you did anyway, there's not a requirement to stop at that point. Ein mafsikin, you continue in the activity, but the Gemara qualifies that and says the condition is you continue in that activity. You can continue your meal, for example, as long as you would expect to finish the activity in sufficient time to daven mincha before the end of Zman Mincha. However, if you anticipate that you're not going to be able to finish on time, you have to stop right there, the activity, daven, and then you can continue the activity. The Mishnah and the Sefer talks about a related but an independent halacha, talking about when somebody needs to stop an activity, and here we're going to talk about learning Torah in order to say Kriyat Shema or to daven. So the Mishnah says, Mafsikin likros Kriyat Shema. Even somebody who is Torah so munasu, he learns full time, and the example in the Gemara is Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. We're talking about somebody who dedicated his whole life to learning. We're not talking about anyone nowadays. Even he would have to stop to say Kriyat Shema, Kriyat Shema, and Zmanei Kriyat Shema is a mitzvah midiraisa. But somebody of the caliber of Rabbi Shimon Ben Yochai, ve'ein mafsikin litfila, would not have to stop his learning in order to daven, because davening and the zmanei atfila at least is rabbinic in nature. But lamaisa, when it comes to everyone else, we would be required certainly to stop our activities. If we're not going to be able to finish the activity and daven afterward, we have to stop the activity both for Kriyat Shema and even for davening. Even if the Zman Tefillah is only rabbinic in nature, nonetheless, we have to stop, make sure we do those mitzvahs, and then we can continue in the activity thereafter. Following up on Mishnah Beis, there are some interesting shailas that come out of what we've just learned. For example, is it permitted to have Kiddush before Musaf? Some shuls have that, Simchas Torah. Some shuls have it on Rosh Hashanah, which is a more serious question because you have the Tekiah Shofar during the Musaf. And the number of camps, for example, summer camps, they will have a break right after Kriyas HaTorah on Shabbos and have Kiddush and have some great cake and then go back for Musaf, for example. Is that permitted because you are eating before davening Musaf? So Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was of the view that just because they're just eating mizonos, they're not having a full meal, and it's a whole tzibur and shul together, so each would remind another, hey, it's time for Musaf. We don't have that concern that they're going to forget to daven because we're talking about a lot of people. So he said it was not a problem, and he went even a step further when we're talking about individuals that go home to say Kiddush. It would also be acceptable to say Kiddush, have mizonos, because there is a set time to daven. When there's a set time to daven, we're not concerned that people are going to get drawn out and forget about davening. Rav Eliashiv added on that even if you have just two people who are having Kiddush together, that would be sufficient because each acts as a shomer to remind the other one. And even if it's in the family setting, the family is going to remind each other that it's time to daven. However, it would not be sufficient to rely on one's wife or one's little children. That would be not acceptable as a reminder to permit having a mizonos before davening, for example, Musaf. Another interesting question when we talked about activities that when it's man of tefillah, we should be davening, we can't get drawn in. We even said you can't go to the shvitz, to the merchatz. So how about going to the mikvah or taking a shower or a bath before davening shacharis? If it's not really early in the morning before the zman, or half hour before the zman, half hour before alos hashachar, are you permitted to go and do those activities? So the Shevet Alevi was asked this question, and he answers as follows. When it comes to a bath, if it's the zman for shacharis, the same would apply for mincha marav. Ideally, you would not do it. You're putting your whole body in the water. It's easy to get drawn in and enjoy the hot water. So lechatchila, we should be machmir to not take a bath at the time of davening. When it came to the going to a mikvah, he was melamed zchus. In other words, he permitted it. It's okay to go, maybe not the ideal, but it permitted to go because it's a mitzvah to be tovah before davening. And when it came to taking a shower, that is not a problem at all. That would be mutter because you're not entering the water like the bath and the mikvah. You're entering the water. So there, at least the bath, we should be lachatchila, we should be machmir, the mikvah. No, it's okay. When it came to the shower, not a problem. It is mutter. Mishnah Gimel talks about three categories of gzeiras of Chazal that they were concerned that there may be violations, and they built in protections. The first one deals with Hotza'ah on Erev Shabbos. Certain activities shouldn't be done on Erev Shabbos because we may come to carry on Shabbos itself. So it goes as follows. Mishnah Gimel, Lo Yotze HaChayat. A chayat is a tailor. He should not go out b'machato with his needle samuch lechashecha, close to when Shabbos may start. Samuch, we said, is a half an hour. And there's a discussion, how is he holding his needle? Is it even if it's in his clothing as he would walk around and he was sticking it into his clothing for safekeeping, or is it in his hand? And here the concern is Shema Yishkach V'yetzah, he may go out and it will become Shabbos and he'll forget that he's carrying his needle because he's so used to carrying it, he may not realize he's carrying it. Shabbos starts. Iser Doreisa Votzah, if there's no Erev. V'lo Halav Lar B'kul Moso, and similarly Alav Lar, a scribe should not be going out with his kulm, with his pen. And he's so used to having his pen either behind his ear or in his hand, he may not pay attention. Shabbos started. So even Samach the Shabbos, within a half an hour, he should not do that. There's an interesting question that's raised. How about going to shul with a sitter, a place that doesn't have an Erev and it's close to Shabbos, within a half hour of Shkia? Of some said, how can we be walking around with the sitter in our hand? That would be a problem of carrying. So in fact, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said, maybe this is a problem. How can people be walking around with their sidurim when there's no Erev? But the Shmira Shabbos Gehilcha says, is it possible that it's not a problem because when we're walking with a chafetz, with an item, for example, our sitter, and it's our intention to put it down before Shabbos, in other words, our intention is to get to shul before Shabbos and put it down to not be carrying it on Shabbos, there would not be a concern as somebody who's simply walking around with an item not intending to put it down. The second category of concerns in the Mishnah here is as follows, that Chazal made a decree, v'lo yifaleh es kelav, somebody on Shabbos should not try to take the lice out of his clothing, v'lo yikran, also don't read le'or haner, to the light of a candle. In other words, don't use a candle for things that we're trying to be specific about, delousing from our clothing or reading, because in the time of Chazal, the way that they had their lights, it wasn't the electrical lights that we have nowadays, but it was a wick in oil, and the quality was not very good oftentimes, so the wick wouldn't draw the oil well, so they would want to move it and straighten it and make sure that it's burning better, and that would be a malach on Shabbos. So Chazal instituted, don't be reading next to the candle at all. And the Mishnah continues, Be'emes Amru, there's a clear halacha that we have. When you have a teacher, hachazan roa echan hatinokos korim, when if you have the chazan, if you have a teacher and he's teaching his tinokos, it's at Lel Shabbos or it's dark on Shabbos, because he's supervising them, he's going to make sure that they're not violating the problem. And even he can look into the book quickly to see where they are reading, but he's not reading a book. That's just a quick glimpse into the book. Aval hu lo yikra, but he himself is not allowed to read from the book. And they, even if they are present, in other words, the students are there, they would not act as a proper shomer to correct him if he gets a little bit too close to that fire. So that's brought in the Mishnah. The question is, this prohibition by Chazal to not read next to the light, because we may get drawn in and adjust the candle, which is a problem. How does that apply to our use of electricity? So indeed, the Mishnah Berurah does talk about candles at his time, and the quality was dramatically better than the time of the Mishnah. He says that Dein Sarich Lataya Klal Le'olam, you never have to adjust our candles, and their candles had very clear light. So he was makel when it came to candles. And in his time, the Mishnah Berurah, the Chazon Ish nonetheless was machmir v'afilu be'or chashmal. He was even machmir about certain electricity that was problematic. We have an interesting additional question. How about next to a dimmer? And dimmer can be adjusted. So we are obviously makel when it comes to electricity in our time, but a dimmer is something that is adjustable. Is that a problem? So Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach indeed was makel. He was lenient. You're allowed to read by a light that is attached to a dimmer. Nonetheless, the Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa does say that you should cover up the dimmer switch itself so you don't come to adjust it. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and both Rabbi Eliashiv gave a general warning that we have to be careful on Shabbos. There's so many activities that we're used to, and it's easy to continue in our robotic fashions and do it on Shabbos, even though it's prohibited. For example, somebody who is so used to flipping on a light or on off a light during the week that he may come to do it on Shabbos, tape it up. Take a precaution. Somebody who always looks at his watch and turns on the light on the watch, take a precaution. Somebody who is used to shutting off his alarm right in the morning and he uses the same alarm on Shabbos, he's not going to shut it off, obviously. It's just going to go off for a minute, for example. And he's so used to shutting it off that he sometimes shuts it off on Shabbos. You need to take a precaution, put that alarm on the other side of the room or something to ensure that we don't come to violate Shabbos. The Mishnah then concludes with the third concern that Chazal had. Kiyotzeba, similar concern, lo yochal hazav im hazava. We're talking about in a man and wife that they each have a certain type of tuma, a tuma zav or zava. We'd say the same thing applies when a woman is a nida. They should not eat together, for example, on the same table, the same mat. They need, as this is how we paskin in Shulchan Aruch, they need to have a divider between them, or they need to eat on different mats or something like that, so they remember to keep a distance between them. Mipnei hergel haver, because if we don't have a distinction between them, a reminder, they may come and violate the harchakos and may do worse. They may be interacting as a husband and a wife in a way that it's prohibited when one or both of them are tameim. Mishnah Dalit is a fascinating Mishnah, and it refers back to the prior Mishnah where we said that it's prohibited to delouse, to remove lice from one's clothing by a fire, by a lamp, and also to read with a candle. So the Mishnah comes and tells us when that was decreed by Chazal. The Eilu Min Halachas, those two halachas that we just learned referred to, Sha'amru, that Chazal paskin like that, Ba'alias, which is the attic of Hananiah ben Chizkiah ben Gurion, who was the sage, who was the big Talmud Chacham in his time of his generation, Kisha'alu Levakra, literally when Chazal went to visit him. What's going on here? Very interesting background at that time of the Anshei Knesset Agdola, during the Bayi Sheni, during the time of the Second Temple. The Chazal viewed Sefer Yechezkel, which is included in our Tanakh, as problematic because there were certain things in there that apparently contradicted the Torah. So what Hananiah ben Chizkiah ben Gurion did is he went up and secluded himself in his attic, and he was writing a commentary on Sefer Yechezkel to show how it reconciles with this Torah. And Chazal used to go and visit him on occasion, and there was a time that Beit Shammai, those from the house of Shammai and Beis Hillel, were there together, and there were more from Beit Shammai than Beis Hillel. And there is a pasuk in the Torah, a very important concept in paskening halachas, acharei rabim lahatos, that we go by majority view of vote. So at that time, the Mishnah continues, nimnu v'rabu Beis Shammai al Beis Hillel. At that time, there were more of Beit Shammai than Beis Hillel, and they decided, let's make a quorum, let's seize this opportunity and vote on certain decrees that Chazal wanted to institute at that time. And the Mishnah concludes, Ushmona Asar Dvarim Gazru Bo Bayom. This is the famous 18 Gezeiras decrees that they legislated at that time, that very day. And because there were more Beis Shammai than Beis Hillel, all those psakim came out like Beis Shammai, including the two that we have aforementioned about being careful next to the lamp during next to a fire, so we can't have certain uses by it because it may cause Chilul Shabbos. In Mishnah Hey, we have a fascinating machlokis, which has very much halacha lemaisa for us today. An example of what we'll be discussing is somebody permitted to start a malacha before Shabbos, and that malacha continues into Shabbos, but he's not involved. He's passive at that time. So an example would be, somebody wants to back up his computer. It's going to take a number of hours, and he wants to do it when he doesn't need the computer. So he sets it up to start before Shabbos, and it runs into Shabbos. Is that a problem or not? So this comes to the fundamental machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel as to shvisas kelim. Do we have to have our appliances rest, or only on the Shabbos we're talking about, or only we and our animals, for example, our servants have to rest, but our appliances do not have to rest? So in this, Beis Shammai is actually machmir, based on the pasuk in Shmos Chav. This is explained by the Tosefta. The pasuk says, Sheshes yamim ta'avod, vasis l'kol melachtecha, 6 days you should work, and you should do all your melacha. And Beis Shammai is the view that your melacha has to be done. Even if you're not actively doing it, even if you're passive, that's not acceptable. And Beis Hillel brings a different pasuk in Shmos Chaf Gimel, Sheshis Yamim Ta'asem Ma'asech. It's only a problem if you are doing your work actively, but if you are passive and not doing your work, in other words, it's the appliance that's doing the work, that is not a problem. So in that regard, the Mishnah says as follows, Beis Shammai Omrim. Beit Shammai is of the view, Ein Shorin Dio, it's not permitted to soak the ingredients to make ink, Besamimanim, the ingredients to make dyes, D-Y-E-S, or Vekarshinim, or to soak vetch. Vetch is a type of food that's really eaten by animals, but not by people, and it needs to be softened. And all of these, if done on Shabbos actively, would fall under the malacha of lisha, of kneading, under the tolada of kneading. So that would be the prohibition, the Isur D'oraisa. So Beis Shammai is of the view, don't even set it up before Shabbos. If it's going to go into Shabbos, actively doing that, soaking, making the dye, making the ink, softening up the vetch, ela kadeshi shoru mibo yom, unless there is sufficient amount of time for those items to be fully soaked and completed before Shabbos starts. Beit Shammai is the view that we are obligated on our items, our appliances, our items, and accordingly, malacha cannot be done into Shabbos, even if we're passive. Beis Hillel matirim, Beis Hillel loves the view that it is not a problem at all. We set it up before Shabbos. We are not active in Shabbos. Shvisas kelim is not required. It's not a problem whatsoever. So based on this machlokas, again, We have a nafkamina between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, and we paskin like Beis Hillel if somebody could back up his or her computer going into Shabbos. We paskin like Beis Hillel, it indeed would be mutter because we are not required to be shoveis. Our kalim, our appliances can work for us. Our animals cannot, our servants cannot, but our appliances indeed can. And this leads to the very relevant question about use of Shabbos time or Shabbos clocks. There are a number of views when it comes to this. Rav Moshe Feinstein is generally very machmir. He holds that using Shabbos clocks, zilzul, is a disgrace of Shabbos. He says when it comes to lights, that's been accepted, but he does not go any further than that. But there are other poskim that are more lenient when it comes to Shabbos clocks. You put your blech on a Shabbos clock, etc. But in general, even the poskim that are more lenient when it comes to an appliance that makes noise, for example, washers and dryers, we can't use. You can't even have it going on from Shabbos and finishing on, before Shabbos and finishing on Shabbos, because that is a zilut of the Shabbos. We're using a dishwasher also is prohibited. It does make some noise, and even if it wouldn't, many poskim would be machmir in that. So generally, poskim are lenient when it comes to lights and others for air conditioning, but there are limitations. Even though we're not required to be shoveis or kalim, still the poskim say when it comes to Shabbos clocks, there are certain limitations. Mishnah Vav is a direct continuation of the prior Mishnah that we continue examples of when Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel debate whether we have a chiyuv of shvisas kalim or not. The Mishnah says as follows, Beis Shammai Omrim, Beis Shammai is of the view, Ein nosnim unin shel pishtan, we are not permitted to put bundles of flax, l'toch hatanur, into an oven, ela kedei shiahavilu mi be'od yom, unless there is a sufficient amount of time for it to become heated before Shabbos starts. What's going on here is that flax is the ingredient from which linen is made, and as part of the processing of the flax, what they would do is they would put it into an oven after processing it and making it wet, and the oven would heat up and then whiten it. Now, if that was done on Shabbos, that's the melacha melaben, which is whitening, and therefore Beit Shammai was of the view that that process needs to be completed before Shabbos starts. V'lo esad tzemer lo yore, also was not permitted to put tzemer, which is wool, into a vat to dye it, ela to dye it, not to go on a diet, D-I-E-T, ela kedei sheyiklo ta'ayin, unless the entire process, the absorbing of the dye, was completed before Shabbos starts. Again, Beis Shammai is of the view that our appliances, our items cannot work on our behalf into Shabbos, even if we are passive and started the process before Shabbos, because there's a chiv of shvisas kelim, o Beis Hillel matirim, Beis Hillel on the other side, they say these are not a problem because we are not actively involved at all. We're not active. We simply started the process before Shabbos and it continued into Shabbos. Continuing, another example of this machlokas, Beis Shammai Omrim. Beis Shammai is of the view, Ein porsin metzudos chaya ve'ofos v'dagim. It's not permitted to set up traps, talking about before Shabbos, in order to catch animals, birds, fish, to catch anything. Ela kedesh yitzodem me'od yom, unless those animals are caught before Shabbos, because we can't be, our appliances, our nets can't be working and catching things. Seda, catching is another malach on Shabbos. So Beis Hillel matirim, Beis Hillel says, this is not a problem as long as it was set up before Shabbos, it's continuing into Shabbos. A related, very interesting question is, how about somebody, they see, Rachmana Litzlan, a rat or a mouse on Shabbos, are they permitted to set up a trap on Shabbos itself? So the Shmir Shabbos Kihilchasa has this question, and he says, in certain circumstances, even on Shabbos, it's going to be mutter, but the critical condition is it has to be sure that the trap does not catch immediately that animal, doesn't catch the rat, the rodent immediately. That would be the Isra D'oraisa of Tzeda, but if there's a delay, then it makes it only a D'rabbanan, because it wasn't immediate, it's not a D'oraisa D'rabbanan, because it wasn't caught so quickly. And in addition, this is also something that's called a Melacha Sheino Tzricha L'gufo. We don't want the rat. We want to get rid of the rat. So because this isn't a Melacha that we need, the item itself, and also Uletzorech Gadol, is there is a real need, as anyone knows, you find the rat, mouth in the house, that is not good for Onik Shabbos or Shalom Bayis or anything at all. So accordingly, because it is a Derabbanan, it's not a Malacha Shetricha Lagufa, it's Tzorach Gadol, it would be Mutter, but again, on the condition that the trap doesn't catch the rat or mouse immediately, there needs to be some sort of delay. Mishnah Zayin is a related machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Again, what a person may do on Shabbos vis-a-vis a non-Jew. So Beis Shammai Omri, Beis Shammai is of the view, in Mochrin the Ovid Kochavim, we are not permitted to sell an object to a non-Jew. This is talking about right before Shabbos, Ve'ein To'anin Imo, and also we cannot help him load something onto an animal. For example, he comes and wants to borrow or he wants to purchase an item from you, and you cannot help him load it onto his donkey that he has there or put it into the car, whatever it may be. Ve'ein Magbin Halav, similarly, we cannot lift an object and put it onto him, for example, on his shoulders. Here, we're going to explain the concern shortly. Ela Kedei Shiyagia Lemakom Karov, unless he can reach his destination before Shabbos, literally a close place, then it means Beis Shammai is the view that he has to reach his home or his location before Shabbos. The concern here, says Beis Shammai, is if people see that you are selling him something before Shabbos or helping him load a donkey or an am himself, people are going to think that he is acting as your shaliach, he is doing work for you, and when they see he's on his path and Shabbos starts, it looks like he is your messenger, he's working on your behalf, and you cannot have a non-Jew work on your behalf on Shabbos. So before Shabbos, we have limitations also. Beis Hillel Matirim, Beis Hillel is of the view that these activities are not a problem, but even according to Beis Hillel, they would require that the non-Jew or the non-Jew with his animal, whatever it may be, leave the location of the Jew. So if it's at his house or wherever it may be, the non-Jew has to leave that specific area. He can be in a public area, he can be on his way home, that's not a problem, but as long as he left where he picked up the stuff from the Jew, then Beis Hillel would say it's not a problem. So we see an interesting concept here, selling something to a non-Jew before Shabbos, because it could be a problem even coming into Shabbos. A related question is, how about selling to a non-Jew on Shabbos, for example, through a vending machine? This is a very common question, and the Achronim discussed it at length, and in general, a number of Achronim were lenient when it comes to a Jew owning a vending machine business on Shabbos, non-Jews maybe purchasing on Shabbos. However, there are a number of conditions related to it. It cannot be in the property of the Jew. It also can't be associated with the Jew. It shouldn't say Jaime Cohen's vending machine business on it. That would be a problematic. It looks like the Jew is doing business on Shabbos. And in addition, there are a number of other conditions. Most prominent are, it looks like, and maybe not just looks like, but the Jew is earning money on Shabbos. He's involved in Mekkahu Memkar sales on Shabbos, and Schar Shabbos is earning money on Shabbos. So to get around that, some of the Achronim proposed, and this is how they paskin, that the Jew, he obviously loads everything in the machine on before Shabbos, and he effectively gives a kinyan, even though the non-Jew may buy it on Shabbos, but he says, I'm makna, I'm giving the non-Jew the legal ownership of this. It's a bit of a fiction before Shabbos, so I makna this item to him before Shabbos, and I am having him in mind, so that gets out of the problem, mekachu memkar on Shabbos, because effectively had happened before Shabbos. And how about the Jew earning money on Shabbos? The Jew says, I am making a tanai that I am only kone, I'm only going to acquire that money that was put in the machine after Shabbos. So indeed, that would take care of the problems of Marasayin, of Schar Shabbos, of Mekach Memkar on Shabbos, and a number of poskim accordingly said it's permitted. It's not so simple when it comes to a washing machine business, because that is the location of the Jew. People are going into his actually property, so that would be a little bit more, or a lot more problematic than the vending machine in a public area. Mishnah Ches continues another debate between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel regarding use of a non-Jew as a contractor when we give him work before Shabbos, but maybe he's going to continue doing the work on Shabbos. Not when that non-Jew is an employee of ours, but a contractor. So Beis Shammai Omri, Beis Shammai is of the view, a nostin oros le'abdan, it's not permitted before Shabbos to give a non-Jewish tanner to tan hides on our behalf. Tanning on Shabbos is the one of the malachas, it's called me'abed tanning. So Beis Shammai is of the view, we can't even give it before Shabbos if they're going to work on our behalf on Shabbos, even if they're acting as a contractor, they're getting paid for the job. V'lo kelim lekovets oved kochavim. And also we cannot give clothing to a non-Jewish laundromat, a dry cleaner, to do the washing on Shabbos. That would fall, if done on Shabbos, the prohibition of lemilaben, whitening. So doing laundry on Shabbos is one of the lametes melachos. Beit Shammai is consistent with his view. Don't give a non-Jew items to work on right before Shabbos, if they're going to work on it on Shabbos, unless you give them enough time to work on it before Shabbos to complete the task. Now, the concern of Beit Shammai here is that it appears that if the Jew gives it right before Shabbos, it looks as if the Jew asked that non-Jew to work on his behalf. So the Jew is required to give enough time to that Jew to complete the task. And even if he doesn't complete the task, that was up to the non-Jew. But from our side, we need to give him sufficient time. The Mishnah then concludes as follows, Ubekulan, in all of these prior cases, in this Mishnah, in the prior three Mishnayos, talking about the dying, etc., in all of these cases, Ubekulan Beis Hillel Matirin Imashamesh, Beis Hillel says, as long as we give it to the non-Jew while the sun is still up, Shabbos has not started, all of these situations are indeed permitted. There are a number of very interesting questions in this regard. I'll just mention a couple of them. One is it permitted to give your car to a non-Jewish mechanic? That would be a kablan, a contractor, right before Shabbos, because then he can work on it on Shabbos. So the pashtus is, and that's been brought in the Sefer Orchos Shabbos, the seminal work on Hilchos Shabbos, that apparently it should be okay, but because there's a Mishnah Berurah that seems to say, actually two Mishnah Berurahs, one seems to say it's okay, one seems to say it's not such a clear shaila, that one. The next question, fascinating question, is can we put our garbage out, for example, on Yontif and Chutz La'aretz, where it's Goyim, non-Jews, picking up the garbage? We can take it out on Yontif. There's no Erev problem on Yontif if it's in a place that doesn't have an Erev, but we have non-Jews working on our behalf. So in such a situation, they're non-Jewish. They come at specific times. We're not instructing them. Rav Eliashiv indeed was lenient. He said it's not a problem. We can put the garbage into the public bins, even though it's going to be taken away by the non-Jews on Yontif. It was the situation there. In Mishnah Tess, Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel tells us, Nohagim hayu beisava, we were noeg in my father's house, shahayu nosnim klei lavan, we would give the white clothing, lekoves nochri, to the non-Jewish launderer, shlosham yamim kodim l'shabbos, 3 days in advance of Shabbos. This is in accordance with the view of Beis Shammai, that you have to give enough time to the non-Jew to the work, do the work on your items before Shabbos. You can't give it right before Shabbos. You have to give in advance how much time it'll take them. Cleaning of white clothing was much more difficult in the time of Chazal. It would take 3 days, so they would give the full 3 days to the non-Jew in order to clean those, the white clothing. We don't paskin that way. We paskin like Beis Hillel, that you can give it right to the non-Jew as long as it's before Shabbos, and he can work on it on Shabbos as long as he's not your employee. He's working as a kablan. So the Mishnah then continues, V'shavin elu ve'elu, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel both still agree. In other words, in the following situation, we're going to say that even Beis Shammai would be lenient, Sheto'ani mekoros Beis Chabad, the igule hagas, which means that we put the beams of the olive press onto the olives and the discs to press the wine and the wine press onto the grapes. What's going on here is as follows, that there are two stages when we crush olives and grapes. Initially, the crushing is a lot more difficult. It takes more work. In other words, before we crush it, it's not going to happen that the juice is going to come out unless we actively step on the grapes or crush out, put the olives into a mill and actively crush it out. That juicing process is not going to happen unless we're actively doing it. The result of that leads to stage number two, is a bunch of pulp. So most of the juice has come out, and all that pulp is then placed into a large vat, large area, and we get a second attempt to get more juice out, and that's when we put the beams of the olive press onto those olives and what's called the discs of the wine press right onto those grapes, and more juice is going to come out. Now, an important point here, when the Mishnah says that it's permitted even by Beis Shammai, we're talking about the second stage. The first stage, juicing is an Isser D'oraisa. Juicing is the Isser Melacha of Mefarek, which is a tolda, which means extracting. That's a tolda of the Av Melacha of Dash, which is threshing. But the second stage, because the juice has already been majorly juiced, and the juice itself, when it's in the rinds, is going to come out anyway, but we're just expediting that by putting the beams on top of it, that would only be an Isser Derabanan. So in such a circumstance, when the Malach is only a Derabanan, it's not an Isser Malach Deoraisa, even Beis Shammai permits us to start that activity before Shabbos. It will continue into Shabbos, but we're not being active. So when it's only going to be an Isser Derabanan going into Shabbos, even Beis Shammai will be lenient on that. We have a somewhat similar situation that we see here, that the juice, when it's only an Isser Derabanan, and in this situation, the juice would be permitted because it started before Shabbos. There's a interesting machlokas in the poskim about making ice on Shabbos. It's a machlokas, are we permitted to make ice? Are we not? Because you're changing the form. It starts with water and then it turns into ice. But Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is of the view that even the machmirin who say you cannot make ice on Shabbos, if you would put water into the freezer before Shabbos and it's made into ice on Shabbos, that would be permitted. Why? So it's by parallel to our Mishnah that we have here a situation that the juice, it was only an Isser Derabanan afterward, the juice was going to become juice in the second stage, Mimela. It's going to come out anyway. We're just expediting it here. So to hear when that water is put into the freezer before Shabbos, it's going to become ice by itself regardless, and there would not, again, be a problem of Nolad creating that ice. Just like we don't have a problem in our Mishnah of Nolad in the second stage of juicing, that we are creating juice because it's going to happen regardless by itself. In Mishnah Yud, we have a fascinating example of a time that even Beis Hillel was machmir, that an activity that starts before Shabbos cannot continue into Shabbos. And here we're going to talk about cooking, roasting, and also baking. And the general concern here is that these are activities that require an individual to be involved. For example, if it's not cooking fast enough, somebody's going to want to stoke the flames. He's going to want to, and the phrase of Chazal is, Shemayachte bechalim, he may come and stir the coals. And somebody who does that is violating the melacha, the Isser Doraisa of Mavir, lighting a fire. So because of that really practical concern, even Beis Hillel is going to be machmir that the food has to be cooked or baked up to the level that it is already edible, and we'll have to see what that means. So then the Mishnah says as follows, Ein solin basar, we do not roast meat, batzal, which is an onion, ubeitza, or eggs, it could be other foods as well, ela kedei shiyitzolu mibeod yom, unless they become roasted, that they are edible before Shabbos begins. Now, what does edible mean? So there's a concept brought in the Gemara of Ma'achal ben Drusai. Ben Drusai was a thief that was always on the run, so he didn't have time to cook his food till it was fully cooked. He would only cook it up until a third or maybe a half of to where it should have been cooked, and then he just took it and was on the run again. So it's a machlokis in the postgame. When we say that going into Shabbos, it has to be edible, does that mean that it has to be half cooked or it has to be a third cooked? So says the Shulchan Aruch as follows, and the psak is it has to be chetzi bishulo. He's machmir, it has to be halfway cooked in coming into Shabbos. Once Shabbos starts, then it would be permitted. The Mishnah Berurah brings two opinions. Yesh omim chetzi bishul. So there's an opinion that says it's half cooked. It has to be. There's a more lenient opinion, and it only has to be a third cooked when Shabbos starts. And paskins the Mishnah Berurah ubemakom tchak, in a time of exigent circumstances, afshar de yesh lahakel. It is possible that we can be lenient in such a circumstance. So this is even according to the Shita of Beis Hillel, who says that typically, as long as you start a malacha before Shabbos, going into Shabbos, it's not a problem. It just has to start before Shabbos. Here, the cooking has to be done at least a third or a half before Shabbos. And similarly, in the Seifa, when it comes to baking, the way baking used to be done is bread would be baked in an oven. The oven was a cylinder. It was actually narrower at the top and wider on the bottom. And they used to stick the bread onto the wall of the oven, and that's how it used to be baked. Now, because it was stuck on the wall of the oven and the wall was hotter, the crust used to develop on the part of the bread or the cake or whatever it was closest to the heat source, closest to the wall, or if they were cooking or baking on top of coals, the bottom part closest to the coals would develop the crust first. So the Mishnah says as follows, a nosnim pas litanur im chashech, it's not permitted to put the bread into the oven, sticking on the side of the oven, next to, close to chashech, close to when Shabbos is beginning, v'locha rara al gabe gechalim, or a cake, or bread, whatever it may be, onto coals, ela kedei shiyikrumu panecha mibod yom, unless the crust develops before Shabbos starts. That would be considered that it is edible. Now, the Tanakhama is talking about the crust that is outside, further away from the heat source. So the Tanakhama is being machmir. It has to be not only the crust that is closer to the oven wall, but also the other side that's further away. Rabbi Eliezer, Omer, Rabbi Eliezer is of the view that you can be lenient, kedei shiyikrom hatachton shela, as long as the crust that is on the heat source, on the side of the wall of the oven, or right next to the coals, becomes crusted, that is all that we require. So we have an interesting question nowadays. Can you put bread to cook, it's to bake into our conventional ovens nowadays, right before Shabbos, and it'll bake into Shabbos. So the poskim say that our ovens, we also have a concern of shema yachta bekachalim, similar, that somebody will stir the coals, somebody may adjust the controls. We have control panels and knobs in the old days, and now it's all electric. So accordingly, we have the same concern. However, it's possible, some of the recent poskim say, that if you cover up all the controls, you tape them all up, whatever it may be, so you're not going to come to yachta b'gachalim, you're not going to play with the controls, maybe then it would be permitted to put the bread into the oven right before Shabbos, even though it's going to continue cooking, because we are not going to come to play with those controls, to adjust the controls based on the needs of that bread on Shabbos. Mishnah Yud Aleph is a continuation of the discussion of where we are and where in particular we are not concerned that someone may come to stir a fire on Shabbos. So the Mishnah says in the Reisha that there are a couple of times when we are not concerned, even though we're dealing with fire, that somebody may come and stoke the flame. So the Mishnah says, Mishal shlinas a Pesach betanur im chashecha. When it comes to Erev Pesach that falls on a Friday, so we have to start the burning of the Korban Pesach, the cooking of the Korban Pesach, before Shabbos starts. So the Mishnah says we can indeed lower that Korban Pesach into the oven, even very close to Shabbos, because we are not concerned that people will come and stoke the flames. Why not? Because the Korban Pesach is typically eaten as a chabura, a group of people together, and accordingly they will each be a shomer, watch over the other to make sure that they're not mechalel Shabbos by continuing to be involved in the cooking of that Korban Pesach once Shabbos starts. The Mishnah continues, and the second scenario we're not concerned. Ma'achizin es ha'ur b'meduras beis ha'moked. What this is talking about is the Beis HaMikdash in the winter got fairly cold, so they used to have a room that was called the Beis HaMoked. It was the place that they had the fire burning, that the Kohanim could come and they would heat up by the fire. So it would be permitted to light that fire right before Shabbos, even though it didn't fully burn, just light it a little bit, because the Kohanim were zrizim, and they would watch out for one another, making sure that no one would stoke the flames there once Shabbos started. The Mishnah then continues that when it comes to lighting of a fire right before Shabbos outside of the Beis HaMikdash, there's a different set of rules. Ubigvulin. Gvulin means outside of the Beis HaMikdash, when somebody's lighting a fire for their own purpose. Kedeshe te'echoz ha'ur beruban. It's not sufficient to light a little bit. The majority of the light of the wood has to be burning before Shabbos starts in order for us to not have a concern that someone will come and stoke the flames. And Rabbi Yehuda Omer bepechamim, if you are lighting that fire, even outside of the Beis HaMikdash with charcoal, kol shu, as long as it burns a little bit, charcoal is a very effective method of burning a fire, and accordingly, even if just a little bit of the charcoal is burning, that is sufficient to not be concerned when Shabbos starts that somebody may come to stoke the flames.